Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you very much, as always, for being here. It's a week in which Arsenal have made a signing. That's right. We've got a brand new player. Fabio Vieira has come from Porto. We'll talk about that in a little bit with our guest coming up very, very shortly. And all the other transfer bits and pieces, ins and outs, even though there have been few of the latter and not enough of the former. But of course, the window isn't open too long, and there is still plenty of time to go this summer in order to get players in. Before we get on with the conversation today, just wanted to point you in the direction of something quite cool. I did a show during the week with Mike from the Gooners podcast, on the Gooners podcast, but Mike, of course, is also the man behind Gooners versus Cancer, raising money for a very, very good cause, and they, over on their site, goonersvcancer.com, I've got a very cool raffle going on. There's, I think, maybe 100 tickets left. There's about a week to get your tickets. And it is an Arsenal replica shirt, a 1989 replica shirt, with the famous commentary on it, but also signed by the men involved in that last gasp goal that won us the title in 1989. John Lukic, Lee Dixon, Michael Thomas, and Alan Smith. So if that is something you fancy putting on your wall, you could go to goonersvcancer.com, goonersvcancer.com. You can buy a ticket, enter the raffle, and who knows, you might well be the lucky one to win that really cool prize. So do check it out, goonersvcancer.com. And of course, all the money goes to what is obviously a very good cause as well. So check it out. All right, with me now on the Arsecast to discuss the ins and outs and the roundabouts of the transfer window so far, I'm joined by Charles Watts from Goal. I nearly forgot your name there, Charles, but you're right in front of me.
It's not Andrew.
I apologize for that, but look, my mind went blank temporarily. How are you?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
I'm good. Are you maintaining your solid status as platinum tier this transfer window?
I have no idea. Absolutely no idea. To be honest, I'm trying to do my very best not to even look at social media at the moment. It's just, yeah, these 2 months, it is just, yeah, it can be all consuming if you focus too much on what's going on there. It's a bit of a message of your mind, so try and stay off it.
So look, Arsenal have done a deal, a very significant deal in the transfer market. We know they brought in Marquinhos from Sao Paulo, but Fabio Vieira from Porto announced officially this week, I think it was around this time last week that we first got a sniff that something like this was going on, but he's here, 22 years of age, attacking midfield player. Some thoughts on him as a player?
Yeah, I mean, I can't give you too many as a player. I have to say, I absolutely had no knowledge of him beforehand, and everything I've kind of learned in the last week is kind of based on the YouTube videos doing the rounds and speaking to people, especially some people over in Portugal who I absolutely respect their football opinion, and they all assure me that Arsenal have signed a very, very special player, very talented, who they all think is going to make a big impact in the Premier League. I mean, it was one of those out-of-the-blue signings that you don't really get nowadays, especially for that sort of money. So, of course, all got surprised, really, over in England. But he does look like an exciting player. And like I said, the people I've spoken to over in Portugal who in and around football, you know, and I very much respect their opinion, they really do think he's something special. And he sort of burst onto the scene with Porto, had to bide his time a little bit. When he did get his opportunity, he really took it. And you kind of look at his numbers last season, you know, very, very impressive, especially assist-wise. Yeah. I think in the top, I saw Albinio's tweet, in the top sort of seven leagues of English football, he's got the best assist-to-minutes ratio of everyone from last season. So, you know, very, very impressive. And he just kind of fits that mold that you kind of look at as an Arteta player, I think, in that attack, and you kind of imagine him dovetailing with Odegaard and the added creativity that's going to bring kind of behind in the central areas behind the forwards, and it feels like quite an exciting one. He might take time to settle, you know, he's coming to a new country, all of that. He does look a little bit slight, which I don't think necessarily is the worst thing. I mean, I think of Alex Leb, you know, you look like you could just blow him over, and yeah, he was just so good on the ball, such low centre of gravity, defenders couldn't get near him. Mm. And so I don't think necessarily the physicality of him is necessarily a problem, although probably would like to see him muscle up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's certainly something that they're going to work on a bit. I think you have to, you know, have a certain amount of physicality, even though it's not the be-all and the end-all. And you can look at someone like Santi Cazorla, you know, David Silva, Bernardo Silva at Man City, who are similar-ish kind of players physically, but who thrived in the Premier League. And, you know, when you look at this signing, because this summer, right, is about the attacking end of the pitch, because Arteta has put in place his defensive structures, more or less. He's brought in the new goalkeeper that he wanted. There's another goalkeeper coming, as we know. But of course, he brought in Ben White. Gabriel is there. He brought in Tomiyasu. He brought in some midfield players. He hasn't ever really done much from an attacking perspective in the transfer market since he joined. Willian, less said the better. Martin Odegaard, of course, who came in last season. But beyond that, he's never had to sign a striker, or he's never been able to sign attacking players. And I wonder what you think about the idea that someone like Fabio Vieira will go some way to changing the way Arsenal might play next season by being a bit more dominant, controlling games better. You know, his whole thing about how he wants to make 300,000 passes in the opposition half. If you don't have the players to do it, you can't do it. So you go to the Rob Holding option when you're hanging on to a game, and stick him at the back and just try and hang on. Whereas if you keep the ball in the opposition half, it's much more difficult for them to score. So I wonder if that's what we're going to see this summer from our Arsenal's transfer business, this kind of player profile.
I would say so. And I think it's definitely a really good point, the whole, you know, moving away from the quick, let's throw Rob on for the last 20 minutes and try and see this game out. You know, Arteta doesn't want that. It's not his ethos. It's not what he wants. His football vision is about. And he, you know, made that clear, that quote you said there. I think that was after the Watford game, wasn't it? Yeah. When there was a bit panic stations at the end when it really shouldn't have been. And the signings of players like Vieira will certainly do that. You know, technically very, very gifted. Doesn't give the ball away very often. You know, excellent passing ability. And when you kind of look at him and Odegaard, especially in that role, I think Saka's very, you know, he's good in possession and getting better and better in that as well. He's very hard to get the ball off. And if Arsenal can dominate in possession and keep hold of the ball, then it's going to make those seeing out the last 20, 30 minutes a lot easier. And I mean, this is definitely the summer of the attack. There's no doubt about it. It has to be, you know, going into this summer, we all knew it was you know, absolutely essential. And I think when you look at Vieira, and if they can manage to get the deals over the line for Rafinha and Jesus, which is a big if, certainly with one of them, Rafinha, you kind of look at that. If they do, those two do arrive, and then you look at Arsenal's attacking options, they're suddenly looking pretty strong, I would say, because when you think of those players and you add Saka, Smith Rowe, Martinelli into the mix, you've got Odegaard there as well with Vieira, you know, Eddie, who certainly showed us at the end of last season he can make an impact in the Premier League, and you would think is only going to get better. And suddenly they're just looking a hell of a lot stronger than what they've had. So there's a big if, and there's 2 months to go, so we'll have to wait and see how it pans out. But certainly if they can get those deals over the line with the business they've already done, I think they're going to be in a much, much stronger position attacking-wise next season.
Yeah, because we have to overcome that problem, that flaw, that we can't overturn a lead or overturn the opposition going into the lead, obviously. And you know, the more options you have to do that, surely the better. When you look at some of the benches that we had last season, particularly towards the end of the season, you're looking at someone like Nicolas Pepe, maybe, but you know, how much faith did anyone really have in him to come on and do anything beyond that? You had kids on the bench. The attacking side of things were kids who are going to go on loan. We might talk a little bit about a couple of players that have done that this week. Whereas if you do have that depth, if you do have that quality, you're much better able to impact the dynamics of a game. I know Arsene Wenger used to do it all the time, didn't he? Used to just throw on attacker after attacker, take a fullback off, throw an attacker on, take another fullback off, throw an attacker on. It's not necessarily complicated, but when needs must, if you have those options from the bench, you know, you've got a much better chance of dealing with in-game situations that aren't quite to your liking.
You do. They were great times, weren't they? When you end the game with Bergkamp, Henry, Kanu, Wiltord, basically everyone, get on the pitch, score a goal. If only we had those options now. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, you're spot on. The failure to overturn Leeds last season was just a massive thing. And you just knew, as soon as Arsenal went behind, you had no confidence. Say the Newcastle game, once the Ben White own goal, you knew there was no coming back from that. And I think the Wolves game was the only time they did that. And obviously they're at home, that it was a little bit different. But even so, that's just one game. It's just not enough. And when you look at who they had on the bench, it's no real surprise because they just didn't have anyone who could change the game. And if you say you got Vieira on the bench, you got Rafinha on the bench, things like that, and you just got a hell of a lot more opportunity to do that. And it's what Arsenal need to do if they're gonna, because you go behind in the Premier League, it's plain and simple, the best teams go behind, Man City go behind, Liverpool go behind, but they find a way to win, they come back, they win games. And if you can't do that, you're not going to win. So it's absolutely essential that they have that ability, especially with five subs now next season. I think the squads are going to be so important. That five subs rule is going to make such a huge difference. It really is, to the game and the options that you need to have on the bench to be able to turn the game around. And so Arsenal need a big squad. They need a quality squad, and with European football as well. So absolutely essential they get more faces through the door and attacking faces.
Well, that's it. I mean, do you share any of the concerns? I've seen people, you know, talking online, talking on Twitter, even though you're away from social media. I'm sure you've cast an eye or two over some of the conversations that have been going on, and people will be saying, well, why do we need Rafinha? Why do we need that guy when we've got Bukayo Saka? Do you feel like there might be a point where too many good players is too much, or are you just like, pile them in, get them in, let them battle it out for internal supremacy, if you like, and see the team reap the benefits?
Absolutely, pile them in. I mean, we're not talking Man City or Liverpool levels here with Arsenal either, are we? We're just talking a few extra players. And so no, you can never have enough. You can never have enough good players, can you? You can't. So what if Bukayo Saka's already there? Do you not sign Rafinha because Saka's not there? Of course not. You sign him. You bring him in. You get as many good players. You've got competition drives players forward. And everyone wants to be in a top squad. You know, we just talked about Arsene Wenger. He already had Bergkamp. He already had Henri. Didn't stop him going out signing Kane. He didn't stop him going out signing Wiltord and players like that, did it? It's just
Reyes.
It's just what he did. Yeah. And he built that squad that made Arsenal so good. And that's what you want to get back to. That's the level you want to get back to. And if you want to be successful on all fronts with the demands that are the game now, especially if you're a Premier League team, you have to have a strong squad, plain and simple. So now get them all in.
This is the summer we have got to go to the next level, said Mikel Arteta back in March when he was asked, like, is this summer as important as the last one? And he said, no, it's more important. This is when we need to go to the next level. And I saw the video with Edu, I'm sure you've watched it as well, where he talked about the plan that they put in place. He says, people see what happens now, you know, something like the Vieira deal. They see what happens right now, but they don't really see what comes before that and how much work goes into that. And for us, the Vieira thing has been really, really quick because we only found out about it last Thursday. And on Tuesday, I think it was, he was announced as an Arsenal player. So in the grand scheme of things, you know, the way some of these deals stretch on and stretch out, it felt to us like it was really quick. But Edu in the video said, we've been working on this for a long time. So behind the scenes, you know, they're doing things that we're not aware of. I know silence or lack of stuff in the newspapers can feel like inaction from our perspective. But when Vieira was announced, you had Vinay there, Richard Garlick was there, Per Mertesacker was there, Edu was there, data staff, analytical staff, all those people are sort of there doing stuff in the background now. So, you know, from a fan's perspective, do you feel like they've kind of earned the trust based on what they did last summer, based on things like this? Because, like, how hard is it these days to keep something like that as under wraps as they have.
Really hard.
Everyone's looking for the story. Yeah. I mean, that is difficult, isn't it?
Really, really hard, especially to do it on both sides of the both countries as well, because it wasn't like it came out in Portugal either. You know, it was so underrated. It just doesn't happen nowadays. It really doesn't. I can think of very few. I remember Callum Chambers to Villa was, you know, that was a surprise, although there was, people did know about that a couple of days before and stories didn't come out. It's just a long story, but there was an inkling of that. Matt Ryan, I remember, was a bit of a surprise, but again, there had been a slight sort of mention that it could happen. I mean, it happened out of the blue, but there was a slight mention. I mean, this one was totally, totally out of the blue. And, you know, I imagine everyone at Arsenal were very happy about it and congratulate themselves on it, because they'll take quite a lot of pride out of keeping it out of the media, because it's so difficult to do that nowadays with all family members, agents. You know, it's very difficult to keep everything under wraps. And yeah, I mean, the work that goes into these deals is absolutely immense. There's no way they've just been sitting on their hands for the last couple of months or since the window opened and aren't doing anything. I mean, the work that goes on first through identifying the players, the data, the analytics, the scouting, the reports, constant reports that pile up on, that get sent into the club on players, you know, who've been watched 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. And there's lots and lots of work going on. So there's no way no one's not doing anything. Obviously, fans are very impatient, especially if you kind of gauge in social media by it. And it just happens. I can understand it. Before I was doing this job, I was exactly the same thing. I remember I was working, 10 years ago now, down at my local paper. And it was the summer of Jan and Via. I had two screens. I was like designing newspaper pages on this screen. On this screen, I just had Twitter up, like, just waiting for Jan and Via's medical to finish. I get really angry that it hadn't. So I understand it totally. It's now I'm on the other side of it all. It is very hard to deal with the constant stream of what ends up being abuse over it. So I can understand that people get impatient, but I think you've got to take a step back and think, look, these clubs are working very hard to get the best possible squads, and it's not easy.
Yeah.
And they are doing an awful lot of work trying to get it done.
Well, I mean, look, you can go back as far as you want. If you remember watching football news on CFAX, Teletext, whatever it is, and, like, you know, call up the 1890 numbers, whatever, club call or all of those. Like that.
I got me into so much trouble, mate. My dad used to go absolutely mad. The amount of money I used to rinse on that club call.
Is our phone bill £600? Yeah, I mean, that's it. Like that desire for knowledge and transfer insider stuff is, you know, it's not new, but of course it's taken to a new level at this moment in time. But that strategy that Edu talked about, that I guess, you know, throughout last season when they looked at the squad, when they looked at what was missing, and we could see it from the outside, you know, and it's obvious to everybody what was missing and what needed to happen. But I, you know, the specifics of that and how exactly Arsenal are going to score more goals. You can say buy a striker, buy two strikers, brilliant. But of course, you also need creative players. You need players who can create goals and make chances and all of that kind of stuff. So that strategy will have been put in place by Mikel Arteta and Edu and maybe some of the coaching staff over the course of last season heading into this summer. And now, of course, the responsibility is on Edu and Richard Garlick and those people in those positions to get those deals done. It doesn't mean that everything has to be fixed necessarily, does it? Because, I mean, what's your understanding of Arsenal's interest in Rafinha? Is it long-standing, or is it a case that, well, we thought he was going to Barcelona, but now Barcelona don't really have the money to do anything, so maybe we can get on here?
Well, I think it's certainly long-standing, but, I mean, it didn't really emerge until, you know, I hadn't got wind of it until after the season had finished. But you would think it dates back. It's not something I can imagine they just suddenly decided at the end of the season they want Rafinha. And, you know, they are very, very interested. We know they've had a bid rejected now, and I'm sure they'll go back in. I don't think if you get to the point where you're bidding once, you're not going to suddenly run away if you have that first bid rejected, are you? You sort of go back to the Ben White deal last summer, and I think Arsenal had 3 or 4 bids rejected by Brighton before they actually finally got that deal done for him. And I expect it to be very similar with Rafinha. I don't know if it will end up being a successful chase like it was with White, but I can't imagine they're just going to take one rejection and go off and focus on other targets. I think he'd be a really good player for Arsenal. I really do. The more I I've kind of bought really into this one now, the more I think about it. I think he's a really talented player. I think he's, you know, still nowhere near his prime. He's kind of had 2 years to adjust to the Premier League now, and he's ready to really kick on. And I think he'd be a fantastic addition.
By inference, I guess, you know, the way that we understand transfers work these days. I mean, officially, it's supposed to go one way, but we all know that clubs will gauge a player's interest in joining before they do anything official. So on that basis, and I'm not saying that you should know this one way or the other, but I think what we can infer is that conversations between Arsenal and Rafinha / his agent, Deco, and what other representatives he might have are promising enough that they have decided to go ahead and make a bid.
Yeah, you're not going to be bidding for a player that you've been told by the agent during discussions has no interest in joining.
Yeah.
So I would absolutely presume Arsenal have been given fairly good signals from Deco, and, you know, Deco and Edu, you know, they're not new to each other. They've got a relationship, and you'd hope that might end up working out very well for Arsenal. But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that you're not bidding. You spent a long time speaking to the agent. It's the same with Gabriel Jesus as well. You know, you know when you get to the club, that's the very last point, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've basically got everything set up with the player and the agent before that, and then you get to the club, and that's when you haggle over the fee and try and get the deal done. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure that they're being given the green light from Rafinha's camp to try and get this one done. Doesn't necessarily mean that if someone else comes in and matches the offer that, you know, that he won't go elsewhere. But, you know, why wouldn't he want to come to Arsenal? It would be a great move for him. Yes, he may want to add Barcelona as his priority, but if you're not going to go to Barcelona, then it's either, you know, if you stay at Leeds or go to Arsenal and really kick on your career. I think it's a very easy choice, really.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal to Barcelona is not an untrodden path either, is it? He is still relatively young. So, you know, we could get 3 good years out of Rafinha, and then
someone will pull a Barcelona shirt over him.
Yeah, exactly. Or we could, you know, sell him for big money at that point. So, you know, I'm all in. I'm like you. I think he'd be a great addition. I think just the excitement of having that amount of quality, that amount of depth in attacking positions would be extremely exciting. You know, in a season,
he's got something about him as well, hasn't he? He's got that bite. He's got
a little spikiness.
I overspilled a couple of times towards the end, but you could see the passion he was playing with Leeds. He wanted them to stay up so much. Yeah. Mm. I think his sort of character and his personality is just, he just looks like a real winner, and he really wants to kick on in his career now. And I think, you know, 11 goals last season in the Premier League for a really struggling Leeds side was decent. And after 2 years of Justin, having those 2 years on the back of him now, I think he's really ready to step up a level. And I think it'd be great if Arsenal signed him.
Yeah, no, I'd be all for it. And look, hopefully, you know, when we go into March, April, May of next year, we're talking about Arsenal being involved in the latter stages of a European competition, one that, you know, conceivably Arsenal could win. As disappointing as it is to go out of the Champions League or not finish in the Champions League places last season, I'm not saying this is any comfort or anything like that. I don't think that Arsenal are ready to win the Champions League yet. I don't think that's a controversial thing to say. Whereas Arsenal, if they can make those kinds of additions, would certainly be a team that would be fancied to win the Europa League. So this is where you need that depth, not just from Premier League, but you've got to cope with that schedule. You've got to cope with a World Cup in the middle of the season as well. You know, there's games for everyone. And as you say, the five subs rule as well makes that even more easy, doesn't it, for a manager to get players involved and keep them involved? Because that is a challenge of having a bigger squad, is keeping everybody bought into their role in the team.
Yeah, and I think that's something Arteta is going to have to improve on, because I'm not sure it's been his best attribute as well since he's come to the club. And I think certainly this, you could kind of, I don't know if it's the right word to say, get away with it last season because he didn't have to use too many players in the end, but certainly this season, he's going to really have to use a squad. So he's going to have to keep those players that aren't playing perhaps every week in the Premier League. He's going to have to keep them ready to hit the ground running in the cup games if he needs them and things like that. He's really going to have to manage that squad well, I think, next season. And it'll be interesting to see exactly how he does it, because sometimes there's a bit of a criticism leveled at Arteta that if you're not really in his plans, if you're not really in his day-to-day thinking, you can kind of feel like you're being left out on the outside a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think he needs to make sure that is not the case next season, because everyone in that squad is going to be really vitally important, I think.
I agree. I thought the link to Lisandro Martinez from Ajax was a very interesting one as well, because over the last couple of seasons, left back has been a weakness at times, you know, and that's not to cast aspersions on Kieran Tierney's ability or quality as a player, but there have been issues of availability, which have hurt. Let's remember that season before last, he was out for the semi-finals or the end stages of the Europa League. We played with Granit Xhaka at left back. It didn't quite work out. We didn't have another left back in the squad because we'd let Sead Kolasinac go on loan. And this season as well, I think we saw that there were some trust issues with regards Nuno Tavares. Interestingly, just saw a story before we started recording that Marseille are interested in taking him on loan with an option to buy. How much truth there is in that, I don't quite know. But I think if we're talking about improving the quality up front, and for obvious reasons, there's no reason why that mindset shouldn't apply to positions at the back, even if I think most people, most Arsenal fans, will have a very soft spot for Kieran Tierney, but might also harbour some legitimate concerns that over the course of a very long season, he may well fall victim to injury as he has done in the past. So making an improvement or making an addition in that area seems quite sensible to me. And this guy looks like a very, very good player.
He does, yeah. And he looks like a classic Arteta defender as well, with his ability of passing and his range of passing as well. And he's very versatile, isn't he? He's not just that one player who's going to come in and play left centre-back or left back. He can play across that defence, really. He can even play in central midfield as a defensive midfielder with his ability. So, it's an interesting one. I think if Nuno Tavares does go out, and I've seen, like you, I just saw the Marseille link come up, and obviously Atlanta have spoken publicly about that he is a player there, but they say it's very hard to get a deal done with a Premier League club for someone like Tavares. But I think if he goes out, then you think they're definitely going to have to bring someone in. And I think it'd be quite good for Tavares to go out as well. I'm not sure I'm right at the point yet of thinking you ditch him for good. I still think there's a player there. If you can marry everything together and you can coach him really well, there's someone who could be a very good player there, I think. And I wonder if maybe a loan would be better for him, give him a year playing week in, week out in a top league and then sort of assess him again next summer. But I don't know, it depends what's on offer. If there is a good obligation, a buy clause in there, then maybe you sort of make a quick profit on him and move on. But I think Arteta's not the type of player, not the type of manager, and not the type of man who will just settle. You know, if he's got the chance to improve anywhere on the pitch, even though the focus is attack at the moment, if he can improve defensively, if he can get someone that he really wants defensively, he will push the club to do it. You know, he won't just sit back and accept not having the best squad he can possibly have. He'll be putting a lot of pressure on everyone to get deals done this summer. I mean, you talked about those quotes he was saying about how important this summer is and going to the next level. And I thought that was just sort of classic Arteta there. You know, it was very much like, we really have to do stuff this summer. It was very public. It was putting a bit of pressure, I thought, on the owners. And that's what he wants. That's what he demands. And he will keep pushing for that, I'm absolutely sure.
Yeah, I was going to just ask you that, because it's not the first time where, what was the other quote? We have to maximize every transfer window. Even when he came in first, he was talking about, I'm paraphrasing, but he was saying the only way we can get better is with better players. And it's been like a consistent theme throughout his tenure. And on the back of being given a new contract last season, which is, of course, a show of faith from the club in him, it also gives him a measure of, what's the word? Not leverage per se, but you know what I mean? A sense of security in his own position, whereby he can say things like this publicly, where, you know, we don't need to make squad signings. We need to make first team signings to take us to the next level. And I mean, do you think that's a positive thing for a manager to do? Should a manager have those conversations in the background, or is there any harm in him simply saying what everyone else knows and is thinking anyway, that for Arsenal to go to the next level, they are going to have to push a bit?
Yeah, I don't think there's any harm. Certainly not what he said so far. I think, like you said, everyone knows it. To be fair, he's not saying anything that people don't know. And I don't think he's saying anything overly controversial. And like I said, it's just the type of character he is. He absolutely wants to be the best, and he wants to have the very best players and the very best squad available that he possibly can, and he will keep putting pressure on to do that. Whether they like it over in the States when they hear the quotes coming over, I have no idea. But he's got a very good relationship with the Kroenkes and with Josh Kroenke, and so I don't think they overly mind it, because, like I said, everything that you hear about that relationship, it's a very good working one. And you know, I like it as a you want. I think if you're an Arsenal fan, you want to hear the manager putting a bit of pressure on the owners and calling them out and saying, look, if we want to get to the next level, which Josh comes out and says he does, whenever he does talk,
yeah,
you know, he will say the same thing as Mikel. And so I think it'd be a little bit odd, really, if the manager wasn't saying that when asked.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'm good with it, I have to say. You know, it's been one of the things, you know, even if over the course of the 2.5 years, whatever it is, there have been some ups and downs and things that might give you some doubts, the consistency of the messaging about what he wants to do and how he wants to do it, I've always been on board with that. So, look, it's up to the people who are working hard behind the scenes to bring those players in. I wonder if maybe as well, you know, we have to consider or take into account the other side of things, because right now we're all focused on Gabriel Jesus and Rafinha, Lisandro Martinez, Tielemans, whoever else it is that we think we might bring in to make this squad better. Brilliant. We all love that. But there is work to do on the other side of things as well, isn't there? There's some big name players from an Arsenal perspective that need probably to move on this summer. Nevertheless, they are complicated situations. I mean, the obvious one is Nicolas Pepe, who's was so peripheral last season. It looked like he said his goodbyes on the pitch after the Everton game, but at this point we don't know who's interested, where he might be going, what kind of deal Arsenal might be able to do. I think ideally, you know, people will say, well, you know, get 20 million for him, cut your losses and off you go. But I mean, it might be a case that next season Nicolas Pepe is somewhere on loan with an obligation rather than someone who's sold this summer. And I think that just adds to the overall sense that as a deal, as a transfer, as exciting as it was when it happened, it really hasn't worked out well for Arsenal or for the player.
No, it's been a disaster, hasn't it? It hasn't been good. It's a shame because, like you said, the excitement when it happened was massive, and you really thought Arsenal signed a very special player, but it just hasn't happened. There have been flashes of brilliance, and the last season was a real disappointment, I think, because the way he ended the previous season was so good. He was scoring goals. And you wondered, you know, that he's had two seasons, he's finished really strongly. Is this the year we really see Pepe kick on? But if anything, it was the complete opposite. And whether that's all his fault or it was also just because Arteta had just kind of had enough, and so you've got pretty a demotivated player maybe who doesn't think he's got the confidence of his manager. It's quite tough to perform at the very best in that sort of scenario, especially when you're only coming on every now and again. So I think everyone has to kind of take a share of the blame, really, for what happened last season with Nicolas Pepe. But he's put Arsenal in a difficult position, because I think the season before, if you'd have looked to sell him then, you got much more of an opportunity, because he scored 17 goals, I think, that season. Mm. He scored 9 in the last 11. You know, he was hot. But this season, it's really difficult, because it's like, what have you got to fall back on, you know, when you're talking to clubs? Or it's very difficult to demand any sort of decent money at all when he's had such a poor season and been so on the periphery, like you said. And it's going to be difficult. I honestly think what you said there, the loan with the obligation, if right now I think that's the most likely looking route out for Pepe this summer. I mean, he will absolutely want to go. He switched agents at the end of last season, you know, with the idea of getting himself a move this summer. But it's just not going to be easy, A, because of the money he's on, B, because of the potential transfer fee that Arsenal would want to get. You signed him for 72 million 3 years ago. You want to get something, you know, rather than giving it away. And so it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out, because there's not really been any sort of links yet with Pepe. And you kind of look, is a way back to France possible? Luis Campos, I mean, it's kind of dream scenario. Luis Campos has just gone back, has gone to PSG. Could he imagine a scenario of getting him back to France for them and him performing like he did in Ligue 1 a few years ago? I don't know. Again, that's just a dream scenario, really. There's no basis to it. it's just going to be really difficult. And it is, like you said, the issues that Arsenal have got and that Edu's got, it's not just about incomings this summer. You've got to sort out Bernd Leno. You've got to sort out Nicolas Pepe, like you said. You've got the Tavares thing going on as well. So there's a lot of issues. You've got Bukayo Saka's contract. You've got Gabriel Martinelli's contract. It's not just about incomings. There's an awful lot of work for Edu and Richard Garlick and everyone to sort out this summer. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all pans out. But I think Pepe is the most interesting one. I mean, Hector Bellerin as well. You forget about Hector Bellerin. And
Lucas Torreira, you know, another
Lucas
one.
Torreira. I think Arsenal was so disappointed over what's happened with Fiorentina. You know, they thought that was pretty much a given that that was going to happen. And to suddenly it not happen, and then you're left with the player. And you know, it's just another thing to add to the workload to try and find him another club. You'd think it wouldn't be difficult because he had such a good year in Italy last season that other Italian clubs would be sniffing around. But we'll have to wait and see with that one. I mean, Bellerin, I don't think Bellerin's going to be the most difficult, but it all kind of depends on him, really, because it's going to be about him accepting a wage that is far, far lower. He did it for a year last season. Mm. Kind of basically was on about 4 million, I think, at Arsenal. He went down to like 1 million at Betis. So he just, you know, you're taking that much of a wage cut. I know people will look at that and say, well, you're still earning 1 million. But if you've got financial commitments at the level that you might have, if you're earning that sort of money, then it's very difficult to suddenly just accept a, you know, you're basically getting a quarter of what you were getting before. So they're going to have to work that out. He's going to have to work that out. Arsenal won't block any move. And it's just a case of if he can agree something with Betis, or if not Betis, another Spanish club, just to get him out. I think he will do, because he absolutely wants to leave. So, yeah, I mean, those loan players, you kind of, you look at the first team at the moment, the squad, it doesn't have all those those loanies kind of listed, and you just kind of forget that there's all of that to deal with. I mean, Guendouzi, I think that will be announced. I was actually expecting it to be announced this week. I'm not sure if it will now, but I was expecting it last week. I was told it was probably going to be announced this week, but it's already done and confirmed. And so that's going to be sort of 9 million in, but then the rest of them are going to be a lot more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel like Arsenal... like, I've got a lot of sympathy for the Torreira situation, for example. You know, you loan him, you agree something, they back out at the last minute. That's a pain in the arse, you know? But as a selling club, you know, maybe the perception of Arsenal is a little difficult, and maybe we have a little while to go before we can really change that for the better, if you like, because you have situations where you can say, well, Arsenal should stand firm. They should get as much money as they possibly can for X player, Y player, whatever it might be. But these things can drag on. They can be a bit of a distraction as well when there's other stuff to do. Like, there's an argument that says, look, if something that comes along that's in the ballpark of what you want, you should pretty much, you know, accept it. Someone like Bellerin, do you help facilitate his departure? You know, does he get a payoff? Does that payoff go to, you know, offsetting whatever wage cut he's going to get? Is that smart business? But then it's maybe a consequence of the squad building over the last number of years, where we're continuously in these kind of situations. And maybe it's true of other clubs as well, that they find it difficult to get rid of players. Too. I don't pay enough close attention to all the deals that are done by other clubs, but I mean, look at what Chelsea are doing with Lukaku. There's a fucking disaster of a move, a disaster of a transfer, and they're going to lose a lot of money. But of course, you know, A, we like that when it happens to Chelsea, and B, you know, they're sort of in a position where it doesn't really matter too much to them, even if the ownership has changed. But, you know, this idea that maybe we need to think about how we sell to help facilitate how we buy, it has to be part of the conversation internally, right? Because Arsenal are spending, like, if they spend 40 million for Gabriel Jesus, if they spend 40, 45 million for Rafinha, if they spend another 30 million for Lisandro Martinez, that's a substantial outlay on top of the money that they spend for Vieira. So as much as we might say, look, just get these deals done, get them out, get them... That money's important, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you ask the Cronkies, it's not really important to us and to fans. But yeah, to the way the club is run, I mean, it's a business at the end of the day, and they've got to get better at it because they've been awful for too long. And the fact they've had to just consistently give players away pay players to leave. And these are not just, you know, normal players. These are massive players as well they've had to do it to. And, you know, they've got themselves into a right fix time and time again with contract situations, and they've just not been good enough at it. And you kind of look at the money that they've earned on players in the last few years and compare it to the likes of Liverpool, to Chelsea, and it's just so far behind. And when you're not in the Champions League and you haven't got the extra money of the Champions League revenue, you need other sources of income, and selling players well is going to be key to that. And I think you kind of look at the transfer strategy that Arsenal have got now, and the change we've seen in the last year, 2 years, I think is absolutely key to that. You know, these players aren't going to be coming on, certainly not a lot of them are not going to be coming on a massive, massive wages. Like Vieira, for example, you know, he's not going to be on 100, 150 grand a week. Far from it. He'll be on half that. And A, that'll make it makes it easier to sell if it doesn't work, but also if he warrants a rise in the future, then it's, you'll be able to get it. You look at Nicolas Pepe now, the situation Arsenal are in. Did he really deserve that sort of money when he came a few years ago, when he just had a couple of good seasons for Lille in Ligue 1? Did he deserve to be given 150 grand a week by Arsenal at that stage? You look at it and think, no, he didn't. But that was how Raul did things, and Arsenal are paying for it now. And it's been that way for quite a long time. So I think they've learned from it. And I think the strategy that we're now seeing them use is evidence of that, and hopefully in the future they're going to be an awful lot better, because they'll sell, you would think they're going to find it easier to sell, their players aren't going to be old and tied, you know, tight, sort of getting towards 30, 31, 32 on long-term contracts, and you know, I'm all for it. I think it's a good strategy, and it's one that the club's needed for a long time.
Do you think you talked about the strategy last season, which was bring in young players, and that's kind of the strategy again this season. Young-ish players. It's not youth, it's young players with experience. But also, over the last couple of years, we've seen that from the Arsenal Academy, players have come in and done extremely well. Bukayo Saka, Emile Smith-Rowe, Eddie Nketiah took a step forward last season, Academy boy, and he's got his new contract, and he's got his number 14. And the idea that maybe Arsenal's academy, you know, the fact that Arsenal might be perceived as a young club would be good for selling players from our academy. I just noticed James from Gunner Blog is reporting that Daniel Ballard is going to go to Burnley. You know, a player who we've had who went on loan, who did very well on loan. I don't know what the fee is or anything like that, but, you know, could generate you some money. We've seen Micah Beerith and Omar Ekic go off on loan this season to the Eredivisie. And you can look at the youth team, you can look at the youth section on Arsenal.com, and everyone will go, oh, I know that guy, oh, I hear he's good, I know, oh, that guy, everyone talks about him. But of course, there's a finite number of spaces available in your squad. Only so many young players are going to come through. So in particular, with reference to those two loans that I mentioned, those guys that are going to the Eredivisie to play for a season, and good luck to them, hope they do really well, you know, it gives them a better chance at Arsenal. But is being smarter about getting those players out on loan at an earlier age a way of making the academy more of a revenue-generating thing? So you're always going to have a problem if you're trying to sell a Pepe or a Torreira or even a Bernd Leno. You know, the Bellerin situation, he is an academy player who came through, but, you know, is heading towards the last year of his contract. But being a bit more proactive when it comes to selling players at that level, at that age, might well prove quite lucrative for Arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is the model that Arsenal are working at with the loan department now. You know, it's been a big shift in that in the last few years, and Ben Knapp has been key to that. And that's why he was brought in to really sort of change the way that the loan market works for Arsenal. They had to take advantage of it. They were lagging so far behind Chelsea in that. You know, the money that Chelsea made from loans and doing successful loans and then selling those players on, who, although had done very well on loan, they just weren't going to make it into the first team, because, like you said, there's only a few spots available. And, you know, Arsenal's academy is fantastic, and it produces lots and lots of good players, and they haven't taken advantage of that for enough in recent years, but they're beginning to now. And you talk about Daniel Ballard there. I mean, you know, I think Daniel's going to be sort of held up as the kind of poster boy for that, because it's just worked exactly as Arsenal wanted it with Daniel Ballard for the last couple of years. He went to Blackpool, did really, really well in League One, got himself his championship move last season, did really, really well there, and now they're selling him for a good amount of money. And on top of that, they got matching rights clause included in it, sell-on clause included in it. You know, it's going to be a very, very good deal for that for Arsenal. And they're going to look, that's the kind of deal you want to do all the time with these players. And that's how you want to utilise the loan market.
Mm.
And, you know, you look at the players that have gone now. I mean, Birif's only just arrived at the club. So he's had a year, done very well and going out. And same with Rekic, to be honest. So you can't rule them out coming back and making an impact with Arsenal, because it could happen. But kind of like with Emile Smith Rowe, obviously that loan at Huddersfield worked really well for him. When we came back, you talk to anyone at the club about that, and the difference in him when he came back from that loan was just huge. The belief, the confidence, the fact he'd been playing senior football, that really took him on a level and sort of prepared him for Arsenal. But sometimes it doesn't happen like that, and they're just not going to get in. And that's when you've got to take advantage of the loans, get them in the shop window, get them playing, and then you can sell them for a decent amount of money, include the clauses that you want, and it's just a constant revenue stream coming out of Hale End. And that's why you invest in Hale End. It's not just about getting them into Arsenal. That's the dream, obviously. That's what you want. But it happens with so few players. But you invest in it to be able to get money back, make money back out of that investment by selling on these players that you've trained up and put a hell of a lot of investment and a hell of a lot of work over the years to get them to the point where they're ready, maybe not for Arsenal, but ready to make a big impact in professional football.
Yeah, and when you look at some of the names that have come through the academy and gone on to, you know, establish themselves over the last number of years, in particular, you look at someone like Daniel Malin, Bennacer, players like that who, you know, were not completely and utterly schooled at Arsenal, but I think you would say Arsenal didn't quite get the value from their talent that they should have, even if they let those players go. You know what I mean? So sell-on clauses, things like that, you know, making sure that you maximise whatever potential revenue you can get from these players is really important.
It really is. And like I said, Chelsea have been so far ahead of everyone else in that regard. They've been streets ahead for a long time now, but clubs are beginning to wise up to it, and Arsenal certainly have. It's been a massive shift in the last couple of years, and I think we're beginning to see the improvements sort of paying off now. And, you know, as I said, I think the Ballard move to Burnley, which is a great move for him, and I'm really happy for Daniel. I interviewed him not long ago, and his story at Arsenal is pretty remarkable. And, you know, twice he got pretty much told, right, you're out, you're released. Twice he fought his way back, got himself in and around it, got his loan moves, worked really hard on loan, and now he's got himself an excellent move here to a club managed by Vincent Kompany, who was very, very key to getting this deal done. You know, Ballard, there was other clubs interested, lots of other clubs, in fact. One especially, it was kind of got whittled down to the last two, and the decision was taken earlier on in the week where he was going to go, and the other club hugely disappointed to miss out on him. And you know, that kind of shows how well he's done in the last couple of years, and I think it's a great move for him. Vincent Kompany coming down, you know, Burnley only just come down with real design on going back up, and you know, no one deserves it more, I think, than Daniel Ballard, and so good luck to him.
All right, good luck to him, and you know, there'll be some other players, I think, going out on loan this summer who we'll obviously keep a close eye on throughout next season. Right, we'll leave it there. I will let you go to not look at social media, but as ever, Charles Watts, thanks very much.
Thanks, mate.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Thank you very much indeed to Charles. You can find him on Twitter. He is at Charles_Watts, at Charles_Watts. And he writes about Arsenal for goal.com. Right. Well, that is just about that for this week's show. There don't appear to be any late-breaking surprises on a Thursday afternoon as I'm recording this to get it ready for you tomorrow in terms of transfers. Now I feel a bit like, ooh, should I have said that out loud? Because by saying it, maybe I'm going to make something happen. And if something happens, I've got to cover it on the podcast. But that's now inconvenient. But on the flip side, something would be happening. I'm a bit torn here now. Maybe I'll just delete this. No one will ever hear it, so they don't know. And if nothing happens, I can't be blamed for jinxing it. But if something happens, I can pretend like I was prepared all along. It's win-win for me on this one. So yes, I think I'll just delete that bit. Hope you enjoyed the show, folks. Have yourselves a great weekend, whatever you're up to. James and I will be here on Monday with an Arscast Extra, so please join us for that. In the meantime, take it easy, and we will catch you on the next one. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Dear Arsenal Football Club, I am writing to you to express my deep dismay over a matter of grave, grave importance. While I commend you on the arrival of new footballer Fabio Vieira, I must take umbrage at the apparel worn by Edu Gaspar, the club's so-called technical director. I realize I'm a man of a certain generation. Nevertheless, were I a highly skilled professional athlete and I was greeted by a man who looked like a vagabond in torn denims, I would just turn around and walk the other way. We can only be so thankful that young Master Vieira is not quite as discerning in such matters. Nevertheless, I implore you to recommend to Mr. Gaspar a decent pair of slacks before the next arrival, lest that particular player have some standards of his own. You might also suggest that he tucks his shirt in, and if I may be so bold, a blazer wouldn't hurt. If you would be so kind as to pass on my complaint to the relevant department, I would indeed be most grateful. I am, sir, your faithful servant, Mr. Peter Wrangler Levi Cricklewood.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.